Welcome to Murdochian Tales, Episode 5. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com. We have 3 flash fiction pieces for today, so let's get right to it. Pat and the Apple Pie. Its deep red skin was as flawlessly smooth as the morning dew that dripped from the apple and reflected the hint of the morning sun. Pat was sure the inside was juicy and perfect. However, it was just out of reach of her 7-year-old fingers. She tried to jump to get it, but her little legs couldn't lift her high enough. She ran through the backyard, where the tree was, past several toys and her bicycle, and into the quaint 2-story house where she lived with her mother and father. The door led into the kitchen, where she fetched one of the wooden chairs from the kitchen table. She guessed it would make her tall enough to reach the apples she was so anxiously trying to get. It was a struggle, but Pat made her way back across the yard, with the chair in tow. The legs left rag marks across the wet grass leading to the tree. She placed the chair just under the branch holding what she guessed were the most apples anyone had ever seen. She was right. The branch, heavy with apples, leaned down as if it was trying to help her pick its apples. The chair gave her just enough height to reach the apples, which she placed into her mom's favorite apron, the one with the ducks on the pockets and knitted yellow flowers on the chest. Once the pockets were all full and the apron heavy around her neck, Pat hopped down off the chair and ran back into the kitchen, leaving the chair behind. The sun was rising higher now and lit the kitchen, so Pat didn't need to turn on all the lights. She pulled another chair from the table over to the counter so she could reach the countertop, and proceeded to carefully place all the apples onto it and next to a pie tin that already contained the crust her mother had made the day before. Pat had gotten out the recipe book and opened it to the recipe and carefully read over the instructions. She didn't know how to skin an apple or how to core it, so she skipped straight ahead to chopping them into pieces. Her mother kept the knives far enough back that she couldn't reach them, but she was able to get into the silverware drawer and get out a butter knife. Since there was butter in the recipe, a butter knife would work just fine, Pat thought. The knife did work, but it was difficult for her tiny hands to push it through the 8 firm, medium-sized apples. She did find that it was easier to stab the apples first, then push the knife down, and it wasn't long before she had a nice collection of apple chunks of varying size and condition. She wiped off as much dirt from the juicy insides as she could and placed all of them into the crust. She leaned over and looked at the recipe again. It called for butter. She wasn't sure what it meant by TBSP next to the butter, so she picked up the stick of butter and carefully opened the wax wrapper. She wrinkled her nose and thought, "If a little butter is good, a lot of butter must be better," and proceeded to smash the butter between her fingers and smash it between the apple chunks. When she had finished, her hands were covered in butter. She wiped off as much as she could on the apples, wanting to make sure the pie was delicious, and the rest she wiped on the apron, but being careful not to get any on the ducks or flowers. It was her mother's favorite apron, after all. The recipe next called for sugar. It said 2/3 cups sugar, which she took to mean 2 or 3 cups of sugar. If more butter was good, then more sugar was definitely good. She got out one of her mother's coffee cups, the one with the pink cottage on the side, and filled it 3 times with sugar and poured it over the apple chunks. A pinch of salt was next, and Pat knew what a pinch was. She took off the top of the salt shaker and poured its contents onto the counter. From there, she took the pinch she needed and sprinkled it over the pie. She didn't want to leave a mess on the counter for her mother to have to clean up, so she brushed the remaining salt into one of the pockets of the apron. She looked over her creation proudly. The final step was to cook the pie. She knew how to do that. Her mother had often let her set the dial. She matched up the numbers in the book to the numbers on the dial and put the pie into the oven. The recipe said to let it cook for 40 to 50 minutes. Pat didn't want to wait too long, so she set the kitchen timer for 40 minutes, placed the chair in front of the oven, and waited. She dangled her feet off the edge of the chair and fidgeted while she waited. It didn't take long, and soon the house was filled with the smell of baked apples. Pat watched the time nervously as the minutes ticked away until the bell dinged. She grabbed the oven mitts off the counter and opened the oven to get the pie. As she did, she looked over and saw that her parents were looking around the kitchen. Excitedly, she called out, "Happy birthday, Mommy! I made you a pie!" Mike and the Pizza Pie. Its deep red surface was as flawlessly smooth as the morning dew that dripped from the fire truck and reflected the hint of the morning sun. That was until Mike took the golf club he'd found in the hall closet and began to assail the defenseless truck into a lumpy, broken mass. Mike was sure that's what his 7-year-old little fingers were supposed to do, but the feeling was fleeting, and he felt empty once again. He ran through the yard and tried to catch the family dog, Fluffy, who wasn't so fluffy after the incident with the matches, and finally gave up and tossed the golf club at the small terrier. He'd thought the club would give him the extra reach he needed to smack the dog, but it was apparent that the animal knew just how far away to stay away from Mike. The feeling of defeat didn't last long. Nothing much ever did with Mike, but he soon found himself in the kitchen wondering what it would take to wake up his parents. That's when he caught sight of the pizza dough that his father had spread out the night before in hopes of making a pizza. Mike had wanted pizza, but his dad wasn't able to make any after taking a drink of the soda can Mike had poured Drano in. Instead, they spent the entire night in the emergency room. Everything appeared to be laid out and ready to put onto the pizza. Mike just needed something to stand upon. The television appeared to be the right height, and so Mike pulled it off the counter with a crash and slid it next to the pizza preparation position. Standing on top of the now broken TV, Mike was able to reach the counter and all the assorted ingredients that were supposed to go onto it. He'd seen his dad do this before, and he was confident that it would be no trouble at all. He knew the cans of tomato sauce were first, and his father had already opened the cans. He grabbed the first by the lid and lifted the heavy can. He had to squeeze tightly because the sauce was causing it to slip out of his hand, and he dropped it in pain. The blood dripped off his hand. Some fell into the can, some spilled out onto the pizza crust, but Mike was only concerned with getting to the drawer where his mom kept the bandages for just such an occasion. He gritted his teeth and fought back the tears. His dad had always told him that only little girls cried. He was able to get into the drawer easily enough by pulling it all the way out until it fell to the floor. Before applying the bandage, he wiped his hands off on the shirt he was wearing. It was the one his father usually wore out on the nights he went bowling, and Mike was sure his dad was going to love the neat pattern he just made with the tomato sauce and blood. Once his hand was all wrapped up with half the roll of gauze and secured with equally as much tape, Mike remembered why he was in the kitchen in the first place. Pizza! He rushed back over to the counter and slid on the tomato sauce that was on the floor and came down hard on the floor and bumped his head. He shook his head until his vision cleared again and got back up onto the TV to finish making the pizza he'd almost started. This time he was happy to have the bandage on his hand, for the lid did not cut all the way through, and he was able to dump the tomato sauce onto the pizza dough. Most of the sauce ran off the dough and across the counter, but Mike was able to sop up much of it with his bandage and squeeze it out onto the dough. Mike thought hard for a minute, then remembered that pizza had half cheese. Luckily, his dad had bought the kind that comes already shredded and in a bag. It was just that getting it open was the trouble. He pulled hard on the bag and chewed on it for a bit and pulled again. Finally, it gave and burst open, its contents flying into the air. Most of it fell onto the floor, and Mike decided that pizza was always better with less cheese. Next came the part Mike loved, the pepperoni. After eating several, Mike decided that he should put at least some on the pizza. He pulled handfuls out of the bag and placed them into the middle of the pizza. He looked at the pile he'd placed there, looked at it, and wrinkled his face. Something in his mind just wasn't right, and the pizza didn't look good either. Spread out, he thought gleefully, and he proceeded to spread the pepperoni across the pizza. Once that was done, he picked up the pizza and prepared to move it to the oven. Unfortunately, his shoes were still slick from the tomato sauce, and he slipped and fell with the pizza. Both tumbled to the floor and both landed face down. Once Mike had restored the pizza to the tray it had been on and ate the pepperoni he didn't feel would fit again, he opened the oven and placed his masterpiece inside. He then looked at the dial and turned all the burners on until he found the oven knob at the far end and turned the oven all the way up to broil. At last he was ready for a break and pulled up two chairs in front of the oven and laid down for a nap. Mike didn't know how long he'd been asleep, but he was roused out of his slumber by, "Oh my God!" Smoke billowed across the kitchen ceiling.
"Not again!" Mike's mother cried. "Happy birthday, Dad!" Mike said excitedly.
Jelly Boy. Jelly Boy opened his eyes. The smell of fresh baked bread was in the air. He was warmed by a heat lamp as he looked at his golden fingers. He squeezed them together and smiled as they pushed slightly into each other.
"I'd like a Jelly Boy," a man in a clean pressed suit said to the cashier.
"Excellent choice. You can see this one is very fresh. Just woke up."
The second voice came from a woman with long auburn hair.
There was flour on her left cheek and a gentle smile on her lips. "My son just loves these," the man said as he fished in his wallet for the money. The woman's hand reached in with a piece of wax paper and picked up Jelly Boy. Her fingers tickled and he let out a squeaky laugh. She gave him a soft kiss goodbye and delicately placed him into a white paper sack. "Have a wonderful day," said the woman. Jelly Boy knew he was going to miss Mom, but he was excited about going to the house with this man. There was a boy there. That sounded exciting. Shifting slightly in his wax paper bed, Jelly Boy heard something close, followed by a rumpling. He put his hands to his face and giggled with delight. The trip to the man's house didn't take long. Almost instantly, he heard another voice. "Honey, you didn't bring another one of those home, did you?" "But Johnny loves these." "Honestly, Stephen, you'll ruin his dinner."
"I'll just tell him he can't eat it until after dinner. But can I give it to him now? You know how he loves to play with them."
"Let me see it first." The bag opened, and Jelly Boy saw a new woman's face. Her eyes were edged in wrinkles, and a mild frown on her face. Jelly Boy smiled and waved.
"Oh, they're just so darn cute, aren't they? Oh, go give it to Johnny."
The woman reached in and picked up Jelly Boy. He tittered and wiggled in her hands. Fingers tickled so much, she handed him to the man.
"Johnny, come down here. I've got a surprise for you," the man called out.
Jelly Boy's eyes widened as Johnny came into the room. This was going to be his best friend. He knew that. The boy had curly blonde hair and large blue eyes.
"A Jelly Boy! A Jelly Boy!"
Johnny squealed in joy. He jumped up and down and clapped his hands.
"Now, Johnny," the man said in a stern voice, "I'm giving him to you now, but you cannot eat him until after dinner. Do you understand? I don't want you to ruin your appetite."
"I promise, Daddy, I promise."
"Very well."
Johnny gingerly took Jelly Boy from his father and nuzzled the soft golden tummy to his nose. Jelly Boy laughed and kissed Johnny on the forehead. Without another word, Johnny ran back into his room.
"I'm going to have to name you,"
Johnny said to Jelly Boy.
"I wonder what name you'd like. How's about Jelly Joe, or maybe Jelly Jack? That's it. I haven't had a Jelly Jack in a long time, and it's as fine as any. So, Jelly Jack, what should we do first?"
Johnny placed Jelly Boy on a toy tank and ran over some plastic army men.
Bash! Smash! Crash!
Jelly Boy cried with excitement as little green plastic man flew into the air and back onto the floor.
"This is great, isn't it, Jelly Jack?"
Jelly Boy smiled. His best friend was so much fun. They spent the rest of the afternoon playing cards, knocking over blocks, and in the yard chasing bugs. It was sad when Johnny's mom called out dinner time. Jelly Boy was placed on the counter while the family ate. He rolled his head to the side and smiled as he watched Johnny. The boy winked. Jelly Boy winked back. When dinner was done, Johnny asked,
"Can I eat him now, Mom? Can I?"
"You ate a lot of dinner, Johnny. Are you sure you've got room?"
"I've always got lots of room for a Jelly Jack."
"So you named this one Jelly Jack, eh?" Johnny's mom said with a smile. She picked up Jelly Boy and handed him to Johnny. "Just you be careful and don't you make yourself sick."
"Don't worry, Mom, I won't."
Johnny ran into the living room with Jelly Boy and turned on the television. He turned the channel to cartoons and sat on the couch.
"What a day, huh, Jelly Jack?"
Jelly Boy smiled. Johnny pulled one of Jelly Boy's arms off and popped it into his mouth.
"Boy, you taste good," he said.
Jelly Boy looked at the spot where his arm had been. Red jelly oozed out. Jelly Boy giggled. Johnny Boy pulled off the other arm and moaned with pleasure. This made Jelly Boy so happy. His best friend was happy. The legs went next. Jelly Boy was happy to see them go into Johnny's mouth. If he could have, he would have wiggled his toes in Johnny's mouth and tickled the roof of his mouth. There was a brief pause as Johnny laughed at something that happened on the cartoon and absentmindedly took a bite from Jelly Boy's side.
"Whee!"
Jelly Boy called out.
"You sure are good," Johnny told him. "I almost wish I had two of you."
Two more bites and Jelly Boy's body was gone. Johnny licked the jelly from his lips.
"Well, Jelly Jack, it's been a fun day."
"Goodbye," Jelly Boy said. Johnny stuffed Jelly Boy's head into his mouth and chewed.
Thank you for listening to Murdochian Tales. I have been your host, J.R. Murdoch. For more stories, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.